following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 205. I'm Dave Nelson along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Coming up on this episode, what was that liquid that UFO investigator threw up? Alien is going virtual and the source of a radio signal found in space! Plus the sighting segment and our picks for the week. But first, before all that, our question.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave! What's the question?
If you could place a long-distance phone call to someone from an extraterrestrial race, what would you want to ask him, her, or it? Who wants to start? Who's got a good answer for this?
First, I would call collect.
Of course. It's expensive to call Andromeda or wherever.
Or wherever, or that that dwarf galaxy we're going to talk about a little bit later. That would be very, very expensive. What would I ask? What are you wearing?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
What are you wearing? No, I mean, like, what... I want to find out more about them. So like what's fashion? What do they wear? What's going on? I want to know more about them.
Okay, let's make it one question. You can ask them one question. What would that one question be? That makes it a little bit tougher, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. How about Anessa go? She looks like she's got an answer ready to roll.
Hello, is it me you're looking for? That was the first thing that popped in my head. I'm sorry. I blame Lionel Richie.
Okay, I have an answer to give you guys a little bit more time to come up with one yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
What color is your sky? Or no, even better, what does your sky look like? Because it may be a color that you wouldn't be able to describe. In our, you know, because we may perceive things differently. So what does it look like?
But how would we have a way to...
Any point of reference.
Yeah.
Well,
because
okay.
now we got a language, possible language.
Because then they're like, oh, it's the color Snarple. And you're like, what color is that?
Okay. I'm solving it right now, okay? You're calling the alien and you have a universal translator. This is...
Oh, okay.
You have Star Trek
That simplifies
technology.
A lot of things.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah, yeah. So, you guys got an answer?
I think I'd still ask what they were wearing.
Well,
do you believe in a higher being?
Oh,
Matthew McConaughey action!
all right.
You know the reference I'm making though. It's Contact, right? He was a religious person in that movie. You guys have seen that, right?
Yeah, I remember it was Gary Busey's boy was in that
as
the religious zealot.
Yeah, Jake Busey with the huge teeth.
Jake, yeah. Yeah, he's got a serious set of teeth on him, that's for sure.
They both do.
Yeah, he gets it from his daddy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, your question, Anessa, actually makes sense because you can tell a lot from a culture by their fashions and what they wear.
And their beliefs.
Yeah. There you go. I think we solved it.
Boom. Done.
We got to find the number now.
First, you call 1-800-COLLECT.
I'm thinking 588-2300-EMPIRE.
In the news.
I'm pretty sure we've... talked about Max Spears previously, that he had passed away, and he is a renowned conspiracy theorist. And there's been a lot of questions about whether his death was natural, or perhaps it's some sort of government entity trying to silence him. But anyway, Max Spears, 39, sought to expose government cover-ups and visited Poland to speak at a conference shortly before he died. But his mother, Vanessa Bates, claimed he was, quote, digging in some dark places and somebody wanted him dead, unquote. Just days before his death, the dad of two texted his mom the chilling message, "Your boy is in trouble. If anything happens, investigate." Max, is a world-renowned conspiracy theorist from Canterbury, Kent, was said to have been probing into the lives of well-known figures in politics, business, and entertainment.
Oh, he was probing? He was probing, just like the aliens?
Wah, wah.
No, that was too easy.
The inquest into his death in Otwock on July 16th opened on Monday after his body was repatriated. Polish authorities had initially dismissed his death from natural causes, but a postmortem examination at Margate QEQM Hospital, Kent, was unable to determine how he died. In a statement, coroner's investigations officer Caroline O'Donnell said, "When they returned, Mr. Spires became ill with a high temperature and was weak. The following day, Mr. Spires vomited 2 liters of black fluid." The friend called a doctor who attempted resuscitation before pronouncing him dead. Vanessa, an English teacher, said, "He was staying with a woman who he had not known for long, and she told me how she found him dead on the sofa. Max was a very fit man who was in good health, yet he apparently just died suddenly on a sofa. All I have is a death certificate from the Polish authorities that it was from natural causes, but no postmortem was done, so how can they tell that?" Coroner Alan Blunson told the court he was still awaiting a report from Polish authorities. He also hopes to secure funding to have Mr. Spire's laptop and mobile phone forensically analyzed. The inquest continues.
Interesting.
Yep.
That is indeed interesting.
Maybe. Do you guys have any theories on as to what the black stuff could be?
Makes me think of the X-Files.
I was thinking
that
the
black
same
oil.
Thing. Yeah.
The black oil.
Yeah. That's why I was asking you guys, because that's the first, I mean, that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, like as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I think. Actually, I was at Brad's office at the time, and I'm like, that's some very X-Files stuff.
Yep. 2 liters. Damn.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Or he just drank a lot of weird liqueur.
Lots of...
Yeah, one of the interesting things in that story is he was staying at a woman's house he hadn't known very long.
Perhaps she's in on it.
Perhaps she is.
That totally could be it. Yeah, he was set up with her by the government. She's a government agent.
Yep.
Bum bum bum.
I think we've got it worked out.
Wow. All right. Interesting. No, this is a great story. I love conspiracy theory stuff. And I wish the lone gunmen were here to give us their take on it.
I wonder what Frohickey would say.
Which one?
What would Frohickey do?
It would be probably somewhat profane. There would be innuendo for sure.
Yes.
Which one was he again? I forget.
He's the one with the glasses that really had a thing for Scully.
Oh, that's right.
Like he was the shorter one.
Yeah.
He was the computer expert.
Okay.
Like the major hardware computer expert.
Yeah. He wasn't the one that looked more businessy. He was the smaller, frumpier dude. I don't know how else to describe him.
You know, it's too bad that show.
Bald?
That show was a failure. I think it could be a success today. I think it was well ahead of its time.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe Chris Carter could try bringing it back.
Isn't one of them
dead?
Hello
out there.
One of the characters is dead, right?
Didn't they bring him back?
all three lone gunmen were killed.
Yeah, they were killed off in like season 9.
Oh, but they didn't they come back for the revival last year?
Yes.
Okay.
In like Dave in Mulder's like dream sequence tripping on peyote stuff.
Okay, that's right. That's right. Okay.
But maybe. They're not really done.
Anessa, have you read any of this Max Spears stuff before? Like, have you? Do you remember what we talked about before regarding this guy?
It's been a while. I honestly don't. Let's see. Max Spears, 5 facts you need to know. I hope this isn't about his death.
Was he American?
No, he was British, oh, okay. I believe.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he was from Kent.
Oh, yeah, it says it in the story. Duh.
Yep.
a world-renowned conspiracy theorist from Canterbury, Kent.
Right. Surprise!
There. Right there. Way to pay attention, Dave.
Morning, Dave.
Apparently, they considered him a super soldier for his... within his community.
Oh, I thought you meant maybe he was a, like, at one time he worked for the government as a super soldier. Like, he was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
He was a part of the super soldier project.
Oh, yeah. No, that would make him Captain America. Sorry.
Or, well, he'd be,
Captain Britain.
Captain Britain actually is mystical. Never mind.
Oh,
we're going to go down a whole different hole.
Well, we could if you want to. All right. No, I think that's covered the territory. The territory has been covered.
Bam.
Thank you, Anessa, and rest in peace, Max Spears.
Yes.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Well, Brad and Anessa, welcome back from the holidays. How was your Christmas?
It was good.
It was, Anessa went home and she went to visit her mother.
Well, it's home, I guess.
The old hometown. And I took time off to spend with Alex. So I spent his entire Christmas break off from work.
And you guys did some fun stuff, right?
Yep. We went to the Harry Houdini Museum in Appleton, Wisconsin, which was it was kind of interactive. They had things for kids to get a better understanding of, you know, the time period and who he was and what he actually accomplished and why it was interesting. So
I didn't know that until you posted that on Facebook. I had no idea that was there.
You know, I had somebody told me about it, and that's how I knew it existed. So it was new to me too. So it was it was a good time.
And how was Texas, Anessa?
It was good. It was very Texas-y. I think it was about 80 around Christmas. It didn't get much warmer than that. It was a little cooler than last year when I went down. My mom's doing good. Ate lots of food. Ate more food.
Well, that's what you do on the holiday.
It's what you do. Yeah. You eat your mom's cooking and you just eat as much as possible because, you know, it's gonna be however long till you see her again. And yeah, we just kind of hung out. It was funny. It's, you know, really cold in Wisconsin, and I was down in Texas and it was sunny, and I'm like, oh, hey mom, I'm gonna go sit in the sun. And she's like, okay. And I go outside and I sit down, and this giant cloud moves in front of the sun. And I just, I'm like, life is so cruel.
Thanks, God.
I know. He has a sense of humor.
I know.
So anyway, but no, it was good. I was there for a week and I flew back and then I caught a cold. So,
well, at least you're mentally recharged, right? Ready to go, ready to take on another year.
I was until I started the year with a migraine and a cold. And then I was like, bring back 2016.
No, don't, no, don't listen to her. Don't, no. So are you guys excited about Alien Covenant, the sequel to Prometheus?
Not particularly.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Have you seen the trailer for it?
Yes, I have.
I have not.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. So would you be more excited if you could actually live it, like virtual reality style?
I would get really nauseated.
Okay.
As long as I had like a constant pair of clean pants.
Well,
because that would be scary.
Well, go to Walmart and stock up, Brad, because here we go. The VR experience, the Alien Covenant virtual reality experience is coming. It's going to be available as a paid title on major platforms. And notice I said title. It's not a game. It's a like experience. It's somebody directed it. Ridley Scott produced it. It's a whole thing. It's not a game. It's like what I said. It's an experience. There's no word on the exact release date, but it's a pretty good guess that it'll be coming out around the same time the movie does, which is this May. Alien Covenant comes out in May. The Fox Innovation Lab, which is what came where it came, they described the experience as a dread-inducing journey into the depths of the alien universe. So, Brad, I think you're right with the whole peeing in the pants thing. I think we're all going to be peeing our pants when we experience this.
Depends for everyone.
Yes, lots of them.
I mean, can you imagine being, like, especially the first movie, being in that, like, the tunnel, not tunnels, they were more of a, like, a ventilation shaft, right?
Mm-hmm.
The aliens right there!
I just read a story that in the original Alien movie, the scene with John Hurt and having the alien bust out of his chest, none of the cast knew, except for John Hurt,
I read that
was
too.
Going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, so the reactions of everybody were absolutely genuine.
Wow.
And how I can't remember her name or her character's name, but the blonde actress, actually, it was so intense. After they shot the scene, she had to like go be somewhere else and throw up.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I got to go puke now. Bye.
Yep.
That's insane. What? Ridley Scott's kind of an a-hole for doing that. I mean, the result was good, but still.
Yep.
I'm like, yes and no. Sometimes you have to do what you have to do to get the end result that you want. And if you do 50 takes, they're going to be like, oh, no, that's terrible.
Yeah, he definitely got a genuine reaction, which is, I'm sure, exactly what he was looking for.
Well, let's hope they bring some of that Ridley Scott magic to this game. The rest of the news release sounds equally unnerving. Viewers will discover the true meaning of terror as they navigate through the horrifying alien environments, and a story where every decision could mean the difference between life and death. Now, it sounds like Fox is really on board with virtual reality. This will be the second major VR title from the company. A year ago, they unveiled the Martian VR experience at CES and has since released it to HTC Vive, PlayStation VR, and Oculus Rift. So it's probably a pretty good guess that the Alien experience will be on those platforms as well. Any new ones pop up since then? Are they still the three major players? Oh. Samsung. They have the Gear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so maybe they'll have it on that platform too. I was this close to experiencing the Gear. We were at the Bell store. That's the company that provides our self service.
Okay.
And they had a goggle sitting there. I'm like, can I put it on? Can I try it? And Stephanie was like, yeah, you can. Go ahead. And I put it on, and there was nothing. And she's like fiddling with the phone where it was supposed to be plugged into and like controlling it. Nothing. I was disappointed.
I bet.
Yeah. So, if you had the chance, would you try out the Alien Covenant virtual reality experience?
Are you asking us or the viewers?
Well, both. You guys and the viewers.
I've tried the virtual reality thing probably two or three different occasions. And I don't know if I just had really bad luck with the resolution on each one, but I couldn't do it for more than a couple of minutes, and then I start to get motion sickness. So I'm more of a reality person or just play video games on the TV screen. But I don't think right now the virtual reality is for me.
Was that Oculus Rift?
Yes.
Okay. I think they've since gotten better, because that's a whole issue of resolution or what do you call it? Frames per second, I believe.
The frame rate?
Yeah,
well, frame it wasn't rate. Even the frame rate. It was like the resolution. It was the first one, especially that I had tried. Even the newer ones had better resolution, but it's like I could see the little hexagrams or whatever, like shapes for each thing. And like it moved smoothly. I didn't feel choppy or anything. It was just, I don't know. My experiences weren't that great. So I don't really have much interest in trying it again.
Maybe it'll be better if you on a different system. Because I heard that the Oculus is the worst of them. Like the other ones are like better as far as physical like reactions to wearing them, I think.
Maybe. So I don't know. But yeah, like if someone said, hey, give this a try, then I might after I take some Dramamine.
All right. No, I would totally want to try this. Like I said, I was close to my first VR experience. So I hoped, and there's these arcades popping up all over the place. So soon you won't have to, or you could maybe, depending on where you live, you don't have to buy a system. You can just go someplace and try it out, which is awesome. it's you know.
Yeah, I remember seeing at the window store in San Antonio with Brad and Alex, there was a bit of a line, but yeah, you could go and try the virtual reality thing.
I think it's going to be the return of the arcade. I think virtual reality is going to make the arcade a thing again. It'll be different from the original arcade, but it'll be sort of like the same experience, except for virtual reality.
Dun, dun,
dun. I think you have to do that whenever somebody says virtual reality. Virtual reality.
Virtual reality. Or insanity, sorry.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
Mysterious radio signal traced to dwarf galaxy light years away.
Is it Rock 106?
Yes. long time listener, first time caller.
You're home for 10 in a row.
Let's see. Here we go. A mysterious signal that has confounded scientists for years has been traced to a spot in the sky more than 3 billion light years away. Almost a decade after the first fast radio burst, FRB for short, was discovered, an international team of researchers has pinpointed the origin of one such signal as a dwarf galaxy in the pentagon-shaped constellation of Auriga.
I've always known it as Auriga.
Auriga? But... we'll go with Auriga. It sounds close to Auriga, but it's not about potatoes.
Should be.
They're yummy. Scientists originally thought the signal, sporadic bursts of radio waves, was coming from within the Milky Way itself or from our closest galactic neighbors. But a new report in the journal Nature confirms it emanates from a tiny galaxy 1% the mass of our own. These radio flashes must have enormous amounts of energy to be visible from over 3 billion light years away. Fast radio bursts were first discovered in 2007, and scientists have been trying to ascertain their origin and cause ever since. There are currently 18 known FRBs, but they were all detected by non-specialist radio telescopes that were unable to narrow down their origin to a precise location. In 2012, scientists at Cornell spotted one signal just 3/1000ths of a second long, and it was labeled FRB121102, and it was repeating sporadically. There's a patch of sky from which we're getting this signal, and the patch of sky is arc minutes in diameter. That's not very big. In that patch are hundreds of sources, lots of stars, lots of galaxies, lots of stuff. After more than 50 hours of examining the skies, hoping to get a spot of the signal, they got lucky and were able to trace it to its origin. And now that this FRB has been traced to its origin, scientists may finally be close to explaining what causes the peculiar signals. So that is very good news. And this story came to us from CNN.com. A totally legit source, yo.
CNN, the home of drunk Don Lemon on New Year's Eve. I couldn't believe I was seeing what I was seeing on New Year's Eve.
Well, I'm sure the people that watched the Mariah Carey performance thought the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, this is interesting. Did they make any reference to a what do you call those? What's the word I'm looking for? It's a phenomenon in space, and it's like a pulsar. Have they mentioned pulsar? Could it be a pulsar?
Well, they actually, we'll go back to the article here. They thought it might be a magnetar, a newborn neutron star with a huge magnetic field inside of a supernova remnant, or a pulsar wind nebula somehow producing these prodigious pulses.
Wow, that's some pretty fancy English language right there.
Bam. The signals could also be caused by a black hole at the center of the dwarf galaxy, also known as an active galactic nuclei, which gives off bursts of light as particles, and they fall in into at an incredible speed. While these are the most common explanations for FRBs, Brian Butler of the National Radio Astronomy Observatory pointed out that they may not apply to this particular signal. And, you know, a lot of people who believe it was aliens are going to be very disappointed. It is probably going to have an actual it's going to be ascribed to a phenomenon of, you know, maybe you know, like a magnetar or whatever, and not aliens. So,
well, we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't mention the fact, one more possibility that could be aliens.
And it could.
This sounds like a very young galaxy. So maybe not a civilization that's from the galaxy, but maybe a mothership or a science vessel that's in the galaxy observing what's going on. Like, they're there for a survey mission, right? And they're sending out a signal back to their home base to report on what they're seeing. That's the fast radio burst.
There you go.
That's my theory.
From 3 billion years ago. Yes. if they're still waiting for a reply, I think they're kind of out of luck.
Well, I mean, they sent it out. Maybe it was received, but it's just like kind of floating out there in space. Just
yeah. There is that.
They have a wide berth signal there. Okay, I'm done. Are you done?
All right.
Are we done?
I think we are.
Okay. If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number, area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
All right, so we're going to talk about something that somebody saw that maybe was possibly an alien craft, or just could be, you know, a thing in the sky that's an airplane or a star or the International Space Station. But they think possibly it could be an alien craft. It's a close encounter. It's a sighting. And that's what we're doing here. And Anessa, what do you got?
Well, I have a sighting from 1999 in Surrey in the UK. And the summary is daytime sighting of what I would describe as a bright tear opening up in the sky, a small bright round object traveling out of the tear, moving quickly across the sky for 2 to 3 seconds before a second tear opened up in the sky, which the object entered and the tear closed up.
Oh, cool. Now this is like, that sounds like a warp drive technology or some kind of like, what would be a good comparison in science fiction to what she described, Brad? A portal. Yeah, a portal.
Like, I'm thinking about like when Battlestar Galactica jumps.
Yes.
It's not necessarily like a rip, but you know,
like FTL. FTL.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. They fire up the FTL drives and off they go.
All right. Continue.
They do their jump.
Continue.
So, all right. So it was reported fairly recently, like Tuesday of this week. The sighting time was seen around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. It lasted 2 to 3 seconds. And the description of the object or objects was a bright white ball, not so bright that you couldn't look at it, but certainly bright enough to stand out in the day sky. The size of the objects, with your arm outstretched against the sky, it would have been about the size of a fingernail. Doesn't say which one, but I'd probably go with like your pointy finger, because that's what people are going to do. Point with their index finger. The distance to the object, guessing about 25 to 30,000 feet in altitude. And a description of the area, small suburb of Burpham outside of Guildford. No nearby bases, airports, power plants. I like that they mentioned that. So the full description and details. Mid-afternoon on a slightly cloudy spring/summer day, a friend and I were returning home from playing in the park when we both saw, above us in the sky, a sudden bright white tear/rip open up in the sky as if it had been slashed with a knife. As an estimate to the size of the tear, I would advise you to make an L shape with your thumb and index finger and hold it up to the sky at arm's length. That's a fairly big tear. This tear was not part of the clouds or obscured by them at all. It happened underneath the very thin cloud, as in closer to the earth, and out from this tear, rip, appeared a small, round, bright object which traveled at a steady pace from right to left for 2 to 3 seconds before a second identical rip appeared in the sky into which the object traveled, at which point the tear sealed up and nothing further happened. Can the sighting be explained as any conventional man-made or natural object? I know of no object that appears out of a flash, travels across the sky, then disappears into the same kind of flash that it appeared from. And a little bit about the witness. Being 10 at the time, I had no job, but now, being 27, I work as a visual display artist for a fashion retailer. And their views on UFOs? Again, being 10 years old at the time, I knew a little about UFOs, but only in as much as what Hollywood films showed. I had never been particularly interested in them, but seeing whatever I saw that day has stuck with me so vividly, I could point to the exact spot on the pavement on which I was standing when it occurred.
Wow.
So, yeah, that left quite an impression on that 10-year-old child at the time.
I'd say. Well, if you see something crazy like that, I'm sure. Like, I
kind of stick with you.
There's some memories from my childhood just because it was things that stood out, right? And those things stay with you forever and ever and ever.
Yep.
Amen.
So say we all. Also, Doctor Who, Growly Bear says.
Yeah,
about the UFO.
I didn't see the. I was looking at the top, and I didn't realize that the comments came up from the bottom. So I was missing all the comments. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I just saw that and I thought that was really interesting that it's a tear that this object is flying in and out of.
Yeah. That's something.
It's not like it suddenly appeared and then disappeared or it streaked across the sky before disappearing. It's like a rip in time and space.
Yeah. You know, this is something that we've never had on any of our sightings before. So it's something different. I like it. And it's something that's more realistic. It seems more realistic than something appearing or not appearing.
Yeah. Well, I guess kind of. Because if an object is flying at Earth at a really great speed, I mean, it would probably have to be able to stop really quickly. But that makes sense to like appear. And then if it flies back the direction that it came from, like away from you, then eventually it's going to disappear. So if it's fast enough, I can see how that would be appear, disappear.
I like the whole rift.
Yep. Rift.
Rippity riff.
Yo, yo.
Yes. Yo, yiggity, yo.
Giddy up. Or something.
What?
Hip, hop, hippity hop. I'm the whitest person ever. I'm sorry. I don't even know why I tried to do that. Forget you heard anything.
I'm so dope. But Growly Bear also says that it's similar to a wrinkle in time.
Oh, good call, Growly Bear. Thank you.
Hi. Hello. Making a promo is hard. Hey, this is Brad Ludwig from the Adventure Party Podcast. Every Sunday, we talk about board games, card games, role-playing games, reindeer games. Co-host, friend, game designer, and gaming store manager Glenn Bittner reviews a game each week and recommends something to add to your library or game closet setup thing. Our Kickstarter spotlight shines on a game you should back with your hard-earned cash. We've picked successfully backed projects about 95% of the time. I really thought that airport board game from Russia was gonna fly. Oh, shot that percentage right in the We also chat with people who work in the game industry, or we pick an important topic that deals with some aspect of gaming. We welcome you to the Adventure Party.
Adventure Party is part of the Galactic Network. You can find us at gncasts.com.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making
Doctor Who.
Oh, is that a sign of things to come on our picks and warnings, Anessa?
Maybe.
All right, these are things that we've watched, listened to, read, played, all in relation to aliens in some form or another. And Brad, picks and warnings could be something that you are recommending, or for the warning thing, it's like it's terrible. So what do you got, and what is it, Brad?
Oh, this was just god awful. No, I'm kidding. It was The Return of Dr. Mysterio, the Christmas episode of Doctor Who.
It was good to see him back.
Well, you know, it's been a year.
I was like, it's been what, a year?
And we're still going to have to wait until, spring for us, until we get to see the regular season. So we still have to hang tight for a few more months. But yes, it was good to see Peter Capaldi again.
Indeed.
And doing the most... It's an interesting concept because they've never done anything like this before. And it was an episode that involved a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I recall, in Mexico, Doctor Who is called Dr. Mysterio. And while Peter Capaldi was touring around doing some Doctor Who stuff, he found out that that was the case. It's called Dr. Mysterio in Mexico. And he thought that that was the greatest thing ever. So they came up with an idea to actually work that into a show. And that's what they did here.
So their title for this episode is the Mysterio Holiday Special, The Return of Dr. Mysterio.
Yes. Dr. Mysterio, The Return of Dr. Mysterio. But it was the start of the show, and I don't want to give the whole thing away, but the start of the episode is the doctor had a bit of a mishap while trying to set something up to fix an issue. It sounded like it alluded to with the loss of Amy and Rory. And he meets a young child, a young boy named Grant. And Grant has a cold. This becomes important later. As the doctor talks with this kid who's very interested in comic books, and what was kind of cool is at the time when this is supposed to take place, the comic books they were looking at were of that time period. He was looking at John Byrne's run of Superman, which took place in the mid to late 80s.
And they had both DC and Marvel on display, yes, during the episode, which I couldn't believe. Like, that never happens.
Yeah, well, I think it's because it's a British show. They didn't feel a need to, pick sides or anything like that. It was and I think that expressed the love that Grant, the boy, had for comics in general. So, long story short, the doctor, through a mishap, accidentally provides for a circumstance for this boy to gain superpowers. And he has the boy promise to never use his powers.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, that didn't work out so well. And we get the illustration of the classic, Lois Lane was an incredibly smart character. She was an investigative journalist. She, was in a lot of dangerous situations. She's very cunning, very clever. Yet she could never figure out that with just a pair of glasses that Clark Kent was actually Superman. That was pretty much his whole disguise. That and, altering the spit curl that he had, and that was it. So this plays upon that, but of course it's Christmas and there's an invasion to deal with.
Of course. And you know what? Do you want to mention the he makes mention of previous Christmas episodes?
Yes. What has transpired is the Doctor has been gone for 24 years. That's the time that the span of time between when he saw young Grant to the point in time that we're at now. So the Doctor has literally not traveled for 24 years to be with River until the end of her life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad.
And mm-hmm. I guess what also ends up happening is we get to see Nardole again, who had been kind of cut apart in the last episode. And they do address why he is up and around, which was nice.
Yeah. And he's awesome. That character is great.
Like, absolutely wonderful. The timing and the chemistry that those two have is just a delight to see. Absolute delight.
Well, Matt Lucas is just a funny individual anyway. Like watching him on Great... I've gone blank. It's not Great Britain.
He's almost as good... Well, he's probably just as funny as... James Corden when he came on those two episodes.
Oh Lord, yeah.
Little Britain. Little Britain, sorry.
And it's
yeah,
awesome.
And I miss James Corden. I loved his character. And yes, he
Smitty.
Has that kind of a presence. And it was a delight to see. And it's going to be interesting to see because we've been told that we're going to get Bill, which they you know, they show clips of the next season with the character Bill, and it looks like all three of them are going to travel for a period of time. So awesome. We'll get to see more of Nardole later next season. So that'll be nice.
I love when they do more than one companion. I love when they have somebody else along for the ride. That's always fun.
It is. It's interesting to see that conversation, that byplay, and that chemistry of multiple people. It's going to be more interesting because, you know, as of late, at least with the Matt Smith years, it was Amy and Rory, and they were involved in a relationship. So there's a whole different dynamic that can come from that. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, the three of these characters, the Doctor, Nardole, and Bill, to see how they interact without a romantic entanglement in there. So I'm assuming that there's no romantic entanglement. Nardole doesn't strike me as someone who would be interested in a relationship with with the human female or a human male for that matter. He's just so wacky. Is wacky even a good word to use? He's a very interesting dude. We'll put it that way.
Quirky?
He's very quirky. He actually ruled benevolently, we find out, as he was... he took a wrong turn somewhere trying to help the Doctor. So
yeah.
Anyways, long story short, please watch this episode of Doctor Who, The Return of Dr. Mysterio. It's well worth your time, and it's a good kickoff to this next season of Doctor Who, because it really feels like they've cleaned the decks. River Song is now, you know, that whole era has been kind of closed for now. And they're going to move on and do different things. So that'll be nice.
The Doctor returns in April 2017.
Yes.
I also, just kind of going to the special, I thought they did a really good job of letting the Doctor shine more.
Yes.
Because I kind of feel like he was still under somewhat Clara's shadow a little bit.
He was kind of defined by Clara to a certain extent.
And so to me, he's able to kind of like be more of himself as the Doctor. And I think Nardole or Matt Lucas was a great compliment to that and allowing him to shine through and really bring that out. And I think that's just something that we haven't really been able to see as well as I would have liked up until now. So
agreed.
Anyway.
Agreed.
That's all I wanted to say about that.
Okay, Brad, how many flying saucers does it get?
I would give it a solid 4.
All right. Perfect. All right. So my pick this week is a show that I have had as a pick before, but I thought it's a great one to go back to the well for, especially when I didn't have anything and I had to scramble last minute. Thank God for Netflix.
Yay!
Unsealed Alien Files, Season 4, Episode Space Force. This was a great episode. Just to familiarize yourself again with Unsealed Alien Files, each episode focuses on one aspect of the alien phenomenon, and they always take like a conspiracy theory or a story that we've all heard throughout over the years and kind of tie it in to other events and other theories. So this is the theory of the fact that the U.S. government has this paralleled space agency that's run by the government, and we have a space force with technology that's more advanced than what the public thinks that we have or the public believes that we have as far as spaceships and stuff like that. Okay, so the episode starts off with a story from 1989 that was published in the New York Times saying that they were laying off or they were gutting this agency, this military run space agency. And there's all these like military trained astronauts that were being let go. And that's where this episode kind of launched. And then it goes deeper into other things claiming, kind of backing up the theory that the U.S. military has this space force. And they're out in space and they're being used to guard against extraterrestrial and terrestrial threats both. A few of the things that they touched on was since the early 1960s, we've experimented with how to travel off planet. Many experts believe America has operated a secret space force, like I mentioned. 1957, Air Force develops the X-20 space plane for defense capabilities. It's very similar to the space shuttle. And then they go into, remember a couple years ago, that thing that looked like a miniature version of the space shuttle that DARPA put up for like an ungodly amount of time. It just circled, it orbited the Earth for like 627 days. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Then they go into that because it's very similar to the X-20 that they were developing in 1957. And then they mentioned a couple of things that we have talked about on this podcast before. For example, the 2001 hacker that got into the NASA computers and found a bunch of like a list of non-terrestrial Air Force officers, the fact that aliens were real, and the fact that NASA was scrubbing out picture or UFOs in pictures. Remember that? We talked about that on an episode. I think it was part of the news, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to say
yep.
Anessa had the story, actually, I believe. I could be wrong.
That very well could be.
Yeah.
I was dead at the time.
In 2001? You came back?
Spontaneous. I came back.
Okay.
Wah, wah.
Let's see what else. Project Horizon in 1959 was to put a outpost on the moon, a 12-person outpost. Officially, it never happened. It was scrapped, but they're like, but did it? Was it really scrapped? My wife and I watched this. My wife watched this show called Oak Island. The Curse of Oak Island. It's about this island off Nova Scotia in Canada where apparently there's a treasure buried and people have died over the years trying to find it. And they have this whole reality show based around that, these people that are still on the search for it. And it's been on for like 4 seasons, but this narrator is always like doing questions like, is this the spot of the treasure that the pirates put there in 1869. And everything's a question. We always just giggle whenever he comes up with a new question to ask. One more thing on this episode, former Canadian defense minister came out. We talked about that as well on a previous episode. He came out and said that the U.S. had a secret space force, and it's because of an extraterrestrial threat. And that is it for Unsealed Alien Files. Space Force! I liked it.
Bum, bum, bum.
I'm going to give it 3 flying saucers. I would give it 2.5, but the narrator, speaking of narrators, the narrator on this show is epic. He's got the most epic voice. I don't know if you guys have seen Unsealed Alien Mm-mm. Files. No?
I have not.
Actually, no. I think I have seen an episode of it.
Do you remember the narrator?
I don't recall it offhand. If I did, if it's what I think it was, I watched it like middle of last year, maybe.
He's got a very gravelly voice. Not like that.
In a world.
All right. There you go. That's my pick. Anessa, are you going to be okay? Can you do your pick? Or do you want Brad to accept your pick on your behalf?
Oh, no, I can do it. It's just talking eventually tends to irritate my throat with the cold. So my pick is a music video. Woo! Party!
Rock on.
It's a song called Doctor in the TARDIS, and it is by the Time Lords, who composed of two individuals, Time Boy and Lord Rock, which are the aliases of Bill Drummond and Jimmy Cotty, better known as the KLF from like the 80s and early 90s.
KLF's going to rock you.
Yep. So anyway, the video, I think, is actually kind of a hoot. So it's a mishmash of different songs. They're like an electronic pop group, and they pull samples from different places. So you've got Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll, Part 2, Blockbuster by Sweet, and Let's Get Together Tonight by Steve Walsh. And the video itself, you have what looks to be maybe like a police cruiser, sheriff's car, constable, like an older car from maybe the 60s, a muscle car. And it's just kind of driving around, and you've got the Doctor Who theme kind of playing in the background while all of this is going on. And you also have the appearance of Daleks, of course, saying exterminate, and like we are the superior race and all that fun stuff like Daleks do. And the Daleks, though, I really love because they are so wonderfully boxy and cheesy. It's like they put a big box and painted it and put some, you know, like half spheres on there. And then they painted a smaller box and put that on top. And in a couple of different scenes, you see the Dalek moving around, but you can see the individual inside and you can see the feet underneath walking with the boxy Dalek. And I love the hokiness of it. And I don't know. I really enjoy it. And if you've got a couple minutes to spare, I'd highly recommend looking up Doctor in the TARDIS by the Time Lords.
All right. Cool. I've heard that song before. I love it. Love it.
Yep. Yeah, I had heard it before, but I'd never actually seen the video. So, yeah, that... I came across that on my search for a pick, and I'm like, oh, that's totally my pick, but it's awesome.
What year was this? Do you know?
Like 88, okay. I think.
Can I play something for you guys real quick? And hopefully we don't get taken down. Oh, you know what? I'm not going to risk it.
What were you going to play, Dave?
Oh, KLF's going to rock you.
You can sing it, maybe. KLF's a little bit, like 2 seconds.
So what's your flying saucer rating?
Is it out of 5? I've forgotten in this new year.
I don't remember.
I'd give it a 4.
Okay. Yeah, it's
4 out of 5.
Okay, 4 out of 5. Perfect. All right. So in review, we had Brad's The Return of Dr. Mysterio, the Doctor Who Christmas special. I had Unsealed, Alien Files, Space Force, and Anessa had Doctor in the TARDIS. Doctor Who. Hey, Doctor, Doctor, Doctor Who.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
Before we get out of here, we have final thoughts to do. So let's start with Brad. What's your final thought, mister?
We need to see Rogue One yet.
Yeah, you do.
So I'm not sure. I'm hoping that we can see it in the next week or so. Maybe next week. Probably the week after.
Well, let me know and we'll do a joint pick. We'll do a joint Rogue One pick. There's plenty of aliens in it. Just not. It's not really a spoiler. Of course, there's aliens in it. But it gives us a reason to talk about Star Wars Rogue One.
There you go.
All right. Anessa, what do you got for final thoughts?
One, I miss being able to mute my own mic. And two, I got to go blow my nose.
Okay. Well, be well. You have to, no, you can't leave yet because you guys have to do the bye thing together.
Oh, yes.
So just wait, okay? We're almost done here.
Okay, okay.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. I want to thank Monkey Warhol for providing the intro music, a song called Alien Syndrome. You can find it at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. Also, Retuard von Dürmberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at the Caravel, caravel.net. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Bye. All right.
Now you can go blow your nose, Nessa.
Woohoo! It's not.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.